if I asked you to pick one thing on each from each team that has to happen for them to have a shot, you know, to have a shot at winning this, what would it be? We could start with Seattle if you want.
Yeah, with Seattle, I think they need to have Nicholas Lodero play like the player he has been in the postseason, which is a difference maker. He's the captain for their team. He's their number 10. He was absolutely terrific in their upset of LAFC in the semifinal. And you can make the argument that Lodero, over the past, you know, since joining the league in 2016, has been the league's best player overall over that period. So I see no reason why he can't do that again in this game, though I was impressed with how Toronto defended against Atlanta in the last game and shut down their best attackers. In terms of Toronto, you know, they've been very impressive on the road. I still feel like Pozuelo can make an even bigger impact potentially on the playoffs. He had a good game in New York in that win. You know, I think for Toronto to get this win, that he has to really have a big game, and I think he's capable of it. He's a terrific player.
Grant, it's been 19 months since we sat next to each other in New York. I'm
that long?
Yeah. I your career is still continuing, so I'm very happy to see that, Grant. one of the things in terms of Toronto FC that we've certainly asked every guest that has come on the show is what they think changed with this group and why they have been a entirely different group from June on. From your perspective, what's different about Toronto FC, or what has been different about them in the second half versus the first half?
Well, they had to deal with some real personnel changes with important players in the first half of the season. You know, Jovinko left, Victor Vasquez, and, you know, Pozuelo eventually comes in. And so I think that took a while to get things going. And for a while, we were wondering if they would even qualify for the playoffs. But I had an interesting conversation with Quentin Westberg this week, the goalkeeper. Wrote a story about it on SI.com that came out yesterday. And, you know, this is his first season with this team. So he wasn't around for the previous playoff runs. But he told me that as far as the playoffs were concerned, he kept hearing about their experience of success in the playoffs and the postseason and how things really dialed up, you know, on that team during the playoffs. And he was like, in the first playoff game in Toronto against DC United, I saw it, that the intensity went up, that this team has a playoff mode that not every MLS team has, even MLS teams that finished ahead of Toronto during the regular season. So if he's sensing that, and he's a guy who is noticing a lot of things going on in his team, I thought that was an interesting insight and tells you a lot about this Toronto team and why they're here in the final again.
We had him on. He's a fascinating guy, isn't he, Quentin Westberg?
He really is. French-American, but he's playing just his first season in Toronto in MLS. You know, he was on, I first started covering him at the 2003 Under-17 World Cup, where that was Freddie Adu's U.S. debut at a youth level, when Freddie Adu was the hottest prospect in global soccer.
Right.
And I actually went to Finland to cover that because I was thinking of writing a book about Freddie Adu. And I, you know, never would have suspected in 2003 that 16 years later, the only player from that U.S. team, and there were several other good players too, like Jonathan Spector and Eddie Gavin and others, Westbrook is the only one of them playing today in a first division professional league. And it's a sad story, obviously, about Freddie Adu, but Westbrook's story has been very steady, had you know, a successful career in France. He played in all three divisions, first, second, and third over there. He's well known because he was part of a documentary that was very popular on Canal Plus over in France, following him at the Clairefontaine Academy. So just a fascinating guy, and he's seen a lot.
Grant, you know, one of the things that has been particularly striking for MLS has been this playoff, this postseason. Really exciting games, They've been rewarded by increased viewership in the States in terms of what they've been getting on ESPN, Fox, et cetera. And now we have the championship game. It's a pretty broad question, but where do you think MLS is at the moment in the sort of the public consciousness, and particularly after what's been a pretty good postseason, I think?
Yeah, you know, I think TV ratings are the area where MLS has actually struggled over a long time to make an impact, but the ratings are up during this postseason. They had a new format this time with their all single elimination games, and there's no rest during the FIFA window for 2 weeks, which used to be a real problem for cutting down momentum in the playoffs. And so I think the format change has been really good, and it rewards teams more for performing well during the regular season. You get home games during the playoffs. So, you know, I think that part's been good. They got really good ratings for that LA Galaxy, LAFC game in the playoffs, you know, around an audience of 1 million, which for MLS is unheard of. So, you know, I think that's all good. I mean, on the business side, this league is doing well. It's expanding. There's 29 teams now that are committed, and we're hearing that Charlotte potentially could be announced before too long as a 30th. They're paying expansion fees of $200 million. The next one will be $300 million. They're building soccer stadiums. So there's certainly a lot of competition to get involved in MLS from some very wealthy people, but they still have a ways to go in terms of really getting the television ratings that could make it a league that really would compete with the top European leagues, because right now MLS still has a salary cap and can't compete to buy the world's top players in their prime yet.
The other thing is there are CBA negotiations going on, which I admit I wasn't aware of until I did some reading and some digging on them. But we, you know, those of us who have lived through NHL lockouts and baseball strikes tend to get our backs up when we hear about a CBA. Is there any concern at all about where this league is in terms of labor?
I mean, it's going to be a concern until the next season starts and there's an agreement. You know, the players' union had a teleconference yesterday, and they sound very willing to have a work stoppage if they don't get the deal they want. They see the money that's being paid to start an expansion team in MLS. They want that to go to salaries. They want to get more in terms of free agency, which they have kind of a slight bit of, but not a lot, that they got in the last CBA agreement. And the big question always will be, do they have the, you know, will they really follow that up? Would they really go on strike? And we haven't seen MLS players do that before. So that's my biggest question here, but it sounds like they're, you know, better organized, more resolute than in the past, and we'll see how things shake out in January.
Grant, the Canadian men's national team is going to face the U.S. pretty soon. We saw the result up here, obviously a glorious result for Canada, a catastrophic result for the U.S. and Taylor Twellman and Ian Dark. It's actually fun to watch, just totally went off on the U.S. national team. Where you've covered this team basically for as long as I've known you. Where is this team right now, and why are they in this position?
Well, it's just a funk of giant proportions that includes failing to qualify for the 2018 World Cup, which is literally the biggest failure in the history of U.S. soccer. And they hired Greg Berhalter, but it was a ridiculously long process to hire him. He didn't take over until December of 2018, when he could have done it probably a year earlier. And that's the Federation's fault. And, you know, that loss to Canada for the U.S., first time the U.S. had lost to Canada in 35 years. And beyond that, the U.S. looked bad. Give Canada credit. They've got some very good young players, and they finally seem to be becoming, you know, a team that's better than some of their parts. And it's always kind of been the opposite in the past with Canada. But there's some real problems on this U.S. team. And so now what's fascinating to me is you have Greg Berhalter coming out publicly and saying this is a must-win game against Canada, and sort of implying that, you know, if that doesn't happen, that maybe he should go, that they're acknowledging that. And that is, that certainly raises the stakes from what I expected we would see with, you know, what typically would be sort of a ho-hum U.S.-Canada Nations League game, now the stakes are pretty high.